It's 2:45 p.m., and I have with me Melison Guy Dunham, and I want her to give her address and her phone number, or if she wishes, a zip code, and to tell a little bit about herself. I'll ask her some questions.
My name is, you've already told my name,
well,
Melison Guy Dunham. My address is 1305 Louisiana Avenue, Tylertown, Mississippi. Tylertown is one word, Tylertown, Mississippi. The zip is 39667. But my mailing address is Post Office Box 59 at Tylertown.
Melison, there are several questions here that the official historian, Caroline Bird, wanted us to ask. And our sponsor, our coordinator, Dr. Constance Myers, asked to ask, what is your occupation? And you don't mind saying how old you are, you told me.
I don't. I am a retired professor. I retired from Alcorn A&M College at Lorman, Mississippi, the oldest land-grant college for Negroes in these United States. I've been retired since 1970. Presently, I am teaching part-time history at Prentice Institute, Prentice, Mississippi, which is a junior college for disadvantaged blacks. To be sure, it's integrated now, but it was set up for disadvantaged black boys and girls back in 1907. I'm enjoying my retirement immensely. I've written a book, I've published a book since I retired, and I have the manuscript ready for another. There's a problem of funding right now, and I'm actively engaged in many things.
I know you are. You always have been. I've known Melison for quite some while, and when I saw her here, I just knew we had to get her in the National Archives. Melison, would you mind recording for the daughters and granddaughters your feelings about this conference and your something about your background, but first your feelings about this conference. Why are you here?
Oh, I'm an alternate from the great state of Mississippi. I'm one of five alternates that were chosen. I was one of the state coordinators, but we were outvoted by an anti-group, and I was not fortunate to be one of the elected delegates, but I am pleased that I am an alternate. And of course, my expense have been paid by that. But honey, this, I have no words. This is a trite saying, but it's the truth. I do not have words to describe this meeting. It has simply been superb from the beginning to the end. Even with, you might say there's some little, we've had little flurries now and then, but all in all, it has been a great conference. And I wouldn't, I do not know anything that I would trade for the experience of seeing the people bring in the torch, because I have lived on that. I have one criticism of it, and I'm going to tell the right people if the time ever comes. There was one Negro woman there, and she spoke. And her saying has been, to all of us, an inspiration. She told, she closes with these words, that there man over there said he ain't a woman. But don't, and he, but her final words were said, that man has turned this world upside down, and a woman is going to set it straight. Her name was Harriet Tubman.
You mean she said a man said that, and it was Harriet Tubman who said, and ain't I a woman? Of course it was. I could have told him that. Melison, so who are you going to tell this to?
Whoever's the right person, that something should have been said about her presence, because at that time she was a slave. And you know, there are those persons who think that the slaves have made no contribution to our civilized, to this American press. But honey, to see that session Friday afternoon, that was the greatest thing for me, to see three living ex-Mississippi, of course, Rosalynn Carter, my very dear friend that I had known when she was in the governor's chair, when her husband was governor, really. And then I had communications with Lady Bird Johnson when she was in the White House. We exchanged letters on various things. And to see this gracious Betty Ford, she grew tons in my inspiration, in my eyesight at that time. They were all three marvelous women, I thought. And to hear, oh, it was just a everything I have heard from that rostrum has just been marvelous. I'm so proud I'm a woman.
I like that. I'm so proud I'm a woman. I'm going to write that down for my own knowledge here. Melissa, tell, if you don't mind, something about many years ago when you worked in the some of the clubs. Anyway, when did you become aware that you were of the women's issue?
Oh, I guess I've always been aware, and I was a feminist long before the word was popular. I remember I worked like a Turk, whatever that phrase might mean, but I know I was one of the highest trained people in my section of the state. But the policy was always to let a man be the principal. And if a woman was, no matter what education a woman had, the man was the principal. In those days, you were graded according to license, first, second, and third grade license. And I have never taught a day on anything but first grade license. But I remember working under a man who didn't have any license. He was just an emergency teacher. And they paid him much more than they paid me. And that made me bitter. Maybe for the want of a better word, I'm saying bitter. But I've been a feminist, a person for women's rights. And honey, I was glad to get on the boat. Equal rights. ERA, or whatever the right term is.
Yes, the Equal Rights Amendment. ERA is the I think that's what they call it, yes. For short. You worked in the Mississippi Colored Women's Club.
Yes, I'm presently president-elect. I am the author of that history, the Mississippi Colored Association for Colored Women. We were organized in 1903. The National Association for Colored Women's Clubs is the oldest club for Negro women in these United States. It was organized in 1896 in Washington, D.C., with Mrs. Mary Church Terrell as the first president. But I am president, and Mississippi itself organized in 1903. I am president-elect. If all goes well and I'm living, I will ascend to the presidency in October 1978. I have the manuscript ready. And it has been ready for some time, and I have had problems getting subscriptions raised, but I hope to have it at the publishers, certainly at the beginning of the new year.
That's beautiful. Melissa, one other thing. You remember, you worked for young people. I know so many people call you Mom, and I want you to tell me, you know, and speak into the mic.
I've sent five children through college, and many young people call me Mom. Because when I was at Alcorn, I helped many young people, because somebody helped me, and I felt it my obligation, not only a moral obligation, but my Christian obligation to help people. And I sent five children through college.
Have none your own, though.
I never had one, but let me tell you about my children. I'm especially proud of them. One of them is here. She is one of my youngest daughters. She is 32 years old. She has recently earned her doctor's degree at the University of Northern Colorado at Greeley. She is presently associate professor of business education at Jackson State University. One of my daughters teaches English at Cahoma Junior College, Lizette Hurst, and at Cahoma Junior College in Clarksdale, Mississippi. I have a daughter who is a dietitian in New York City at the Cedars of Lebanon Hospital, I believe it is called. I think I'm correct. Her name is Julia Taylor. She's a graduate of Alcorn College. I have a son who is a minister there in New York. He pastors in Harlem at a non-denominational church. His name is George Washington Davis. And then I have another daughter who pastors. She has recently completed her work at Garrett. In fact, she completed her work in June. She is pastoring a small CME church, I believe, in East Chicago, Indiana. She, too, has been in attendance at this meeting. You must know I feel proud that I've had two daughters at this meeting.
Two daughters at this meeting.
At this meeting.
Do you feel, Melissa, that Southern women are, that it's harder to be, let me phrase that, being a Southern woman and being active in the civil rights movement with you, though I'm not supposed probably to say that, but we know, and being in the traditional field, academics, which was dominated by men, do you feel that Southern women are particularly more determined than, how do you feel about Southern women?
Not only am I proud I'm a woman, I'm proud I'm a Southern woman. It has been said that Southern women have been put up on a pedestal. They're certainly speaking of white women, because a black woman has never been on a pedestal. But I'm pleased that I have always been able to make my own way. I sent my own self to school. When I married my husband, I had my own plot. Of course, it's true, dear soul, he's gone to heaven. He helped me build a house. But I made my life without a man, you know, and I'm proud of that.
Do you feel that black Southern women perhaps have a strong sense of independence?
They have to have, because the black woman has always been the breadwinner. She had to. You remember there were times, this is especially true following the Civil War, when black men could not get jobs. Well, jobs were thought of then as the farm. That was the only thing we knew. And the women made the crops while the men went off to the cane farm or something to winter. But somehow we have made it. And of course, work is kind of a dirty word now, but I'm grateful that I learned how to work. You know, so very few people today, Molly, in 1977, few people take pride in work. But honey, I'm proud that I know how to work. I washed and ironed, I picked cotton, I plowed in the field. And, you know, and in my first experience as a teacher, back in the late 20s and early 30s, I taught school for $22.50 a month. Taught 4 months a year. And now, ask me how I lived the other 8 months. Well, I went to the strawberry farm and picked strawberries. I picked cotton. I worked for white people, washed and ironed, and cleaned house, washed windows, mowed yards, and it didn't hurt me.
No, it didn't seem to do anything but make you grow more beautiful.
Yeah, I remember I used to work. And how I managed it, I don't know, and go to summer school. I'd get out of school the last of February, the first of March. And then by the time when the last of July rolled around, I would have money enough to go to summer school by some hook or crook and attend school. And I studied for my master's degree working during the summer. And, of course, when I went down to the college to teach, the situation was different. I taught 11 months, and I didn't earn a doctorate, but I worked toward it, have some 35 or 40 hours toward a doctor's degree, which I will never obtain. But I know a school that was kind enough to give me an honorary doctorate, and I would be less than a miss if I did not make
it. Yes.
Dr. Dunham.
Yeah. Tell where your degree is from.
Mississippi Ministerial and Industrial College, a Baptist school at West Point, Mississippi. They gave me an honorary doctorate in
1973. Mm-hmm. Now, Melson, you said you went Hampton when you passed through Charlotte or toward Greensboro. Now, tell about that.
A glorious experience. I'm a member of the Ministers to Blacks in Higher Education. And since I didn't tell you this a moment ago, but I am campus minister for the United Methodist Church at Prentice Institute. And
this accusation that there are no church people in this conference is
to hell with them. Oh,
oh.
Yeah. No, because I am director, and that couldn't be said anyway, because the chaplain of Yale University is here, a very dear friend of mine, Donna Schaffer, and she's very much a woman. And they're scattered throughout this. Peggy Bennett is here from the United Methodist Church in New York City, where she works with the Division of Global Ministers. There are many religious people here. How anybody could say that would not be telling the truth. Oh, I don't see how. Oh, rumors.
Oh.
Just like we heard that there would be 18,000 people out there last night to keep us from getting in, and we were afraid to go out.
I heard a rumor in my hotel or motel that the Klan was there, and I wondered if that was done to frighten Southern people who really still are afraid of the Klan.
I'm afraid of the Klan. I'm just as afraid of the Klan. I'm afraid of anything that I don't know. But honey, I was ready for them last night. I had on my walking shoes, and I was just going to stay with them. But honey, back to this Hampton deal. I told the Ministers to Blacks in Higher Education is an organization among people who work on campuses, whether you're a campus minister or not, as long as you're black and have religious influence. And that's what I have at Prentice. And I was honored as being the campus minister of the year, 1976. I think that came about because I have the first listening room. My enunciation might not be perfect. But the listening room on Prentice Institute campus is we're equipped with religious books. We have a record player. And we just think we're doing fine there. And I think that's why I was given this honor. Besides, I'd been doing this. When I was at Alcorn College for 14 years, I was chairman of religious life activities. And then, of course, I got no pay. But now they give me a fabulous salary. I get $50 a month for this.
You get a fabulous salary, $50 a month. That's more than Malice. But you would have done it anyway, I think.
Enjoyed it. Well, enjoyed it immensely. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed everything.
Now, tell me how you feel. Do you feel that when these young women and all of us here, all the delegates, etc., all these people we're watching right now, do you feel that they will take this message back home and try to help others?
The United States will be different. Will be different after this meeting. I'm not saying that the ERA seems to that there is a feeling, I do not know how we get it, that this meeting is set up. The only purpose for this meeting is the ERA, which is not true. But I'm not saying that we will run off and pass, that the Congress will pass it and the states are ratified. But the United States will be different toward the women's issues after this meeting. I would hope that all of them for the good, but there will be some changes, whatever.
There will be some changes. These women seem determined, and you are a beautiful role model. You have been for a Mississippi founder, author, educator, mother, you adopted children. You continue to work and have these honorary degrees at your age. How do you feel about
being 73?
Yes.
Honey, I feel fine at being 73. I have arthritis to be sure, but my doctor was kind enough to give me a prescription. I went to Washington last week for the National Council of Negro Women, and he gave me a prescription that told me that would keep me through both of these meetings, so I haven't had any real problems with my arthritis since then.
Is there anything you want to add? Is there something you would like for the National Archives to know about you, perhaps your work organizing in Southern women?
I've organized more clubs than any woman in my section of the state. That is not true all over Mississippi, but in the extreme southern part of the state where I live, I have organized more clubs. I have clubs of young women, I have clubs of old women, and I'm constantly working now. I'm very pleased that the Lord has given me health and strength to do this. And Molly, I'm pleased that you selected me to say what I've said, and I hope it will be an inspiration to some of the young people.
Thank you so much, Melison Godwin.